Whether it's for work or play, we rely on home internet so much these days. Being connected and staying connected has never been more important. So if you want reliable internet brought to you at speed, switch to Aussie Broadband. It only takes a few minutes to sign up and their 100% Australian-based support team are ready to help. Aussie Broadband, the actual Aussie way. Find out more at aussiebroadband.com.au. T's and C's apply.
G'day guys, welcome back to the Dylan Friends Podcast, the first one for 2021, Season 4. And we are starting this season in style with the great man, Dylan Alcott. Dylan Alcott is a Paralympic gold medalist, an 11-time quad tennis Grand Slam winner, novelist, podcaster, sporting commentator, and an honorary member of the Wu-Tang Clan. Between doing pretty much everything possible, Dylan was generous enough with his time to sit down for a chat in the lead up to the Australian Open starting today. It's a very exciting time for the champ as he targets his seventh Oz Open title to add to an already crowded trophy case. Aside from dominating on the court, we spoke about growing up, finding our identity, and learning to love the skin we're in. Dill had some priceless lessons to hand out around the resilience and incredible outlooks he has on life from a journey unlike anyone else. I know you guys will get a lot out of this chat, and it was the perfect launching pad for a big 2021 for the show. Before we get into the show, Dylan Friends has now launched its Patreon page, Dylan Best Friends. I genuinely cannot thank you enough for all the incredible people that have signed up so far. It's truly incredible and I am speechless. I honestly cannot thank you enough for your love and support as Patreon IllyXX members, Edmund Smith, Jacob Harvey, Jake Wilkie, Mitchell Connell, James Grant, Jake Hyatt, James Plunkett, Oliver Cheeseman, Mitchell Holmes, Damian Hillis, Declan Taylor, Ryan Stubbs, Toby McKern, Brandon Pitts, Matthew Humphrey, and Sean Sebastian. I love you. Thank you so much. I'm stoked to have you on board and cannot wait to connect with you all. So sit back, relax, enjoy. Let's go.
My name is Deborah, Dylan's mum. Welcome to the Dylan Friends Podcast.
Many ways I've been waiting my whole life for this moment.
Tears.
Tears. Tears.
Tears. Strength.
I'm like, I run. She's like, Everyone runs. I'm like, but does everyone go to the Olympics?
They're sitting there meditating going, oh my God, I think I'm meditating. How good is this? I'm meditating. It's
like, they had a Wu-Tang call. I was like, yo, Dylan, thanks for getting us in.
Just love it.
It's knuckle puck time. Yeah.
It's like Don't forget to subscribe and leave a review.
Dylan Alcott, welcome to the Dylan Friends Podcast, my friend. This has been a long time in the making.
Mate, it sure has. I'm easily the second most impressively talented Dylan in the room right now.
That's not true.
Man, we've been talking about this for a while. I got to say, you know, not just pissing in pocket to start, very proud / impressed because you're kicking ass, my man.
Man, I really appreciate that. And I'm not saying this. I am not just saying this. But, and I hope you remember this. I'm sure you will. But when we first met, which was, I'm going to go back and say like 2016, maybe even 2015. And you came to Carlton. You're Carlton man.
I remember, yeah.
And you're number one ticket holder.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure.
Yeah. Friend of Carlton.
Friend of Carlton.
Yeah, we'll round up.
We're a friend of Carlton. And you came to the club. And, you know, we get a lot of, you know, speakers come to the club, public speakers, talk about certain things. But I will never forget the day you came to Carlton. And it honestly, that chat that we had, it really fucking sparked some shit inside of me. And it wasn't the fact that your story and you know, what we'll touch on today. It was just more the fact that I was like, is this fucking bloke? And he just has a crack. And it was before you had a radio show. It was before you'd written a book. It was before Ability Fest. It was before all these amazing things you've done. And I'm not surprised, but I just want to say today how much of an impact that's had on me. Because from that, it just fucking went, you know what, man, if you want to do something, you got to do it.
Yeah, I think also I remember talking to you and you're a bit of a rare unit like I am and you were different to the other guys at the footy club and there is an assumption that you have to conform to be someone sometimes that you're not and we'll talk about it soon but I used to do that because I hated who I was. I was embarrassed about who I was and as soon as I became proud of the person that I was and really embraced my difference, the same that you've done, especially post-footy, all of a sudden the doors open, don't they? But when you're trying to be someone that you're not, it's a bit harder and, mate, I appreciate that. I really do. And
yeah.
It's nice to have, you know, today it's Dylan Dill.
It is. And that'll be on the next cereal box, I think, in 2022. First, I want to talk about something very serious, probably the serious we'll get today, the spelling of your name. Now, I don't think anyone else will understand this as much as we do, but how bad is it when someone spells Dylan like
D-I-L-L-O-N?
Something like that.
Especially when your aunties who have been in your life your whole fucking life spell it Dylan still. It's crazy. And it's because
it's offensive.
It's because of 90210. There was a guy called Dylan, yeah?
Yeah.
Or like, you know, Matt Dylan or the actors. There's a Dylan on Entourage. What's his name? Anyway.
Yeah, something.
Johnny Chase.
Yeah.
His last name is Dylan. Johnny. So, yeah, it's D-Y-L-E-N. But have you ever noticed this? If you spell my name together, which is my Instagram handle, just say the Dill part and then what's next?
All cut.
Yeah, but if you just do the Dill and then the A-N-A-L, what does that spell?
Dill-L.
Dill, anal cut. Have you noticed that before? If you put my name together?
Well, now I have.
I don't know why I've just said this because you've got a huge following. Now everyone's going to go,
Dill anal cut.
Everyone will comment, oh my God, it actually says Dill anal cut. And I didn't, that was my handle forever. And I didn't realize until a good 5 years in when someone from Triple J texted in and goes, actually called in. They're like, hey Dylan, just want to let you know, when you put your name together, it's got an anal in it. And I was like, fuck, I never noticed that. It's good gear, isn't it?
It is, it's guy gear. And that's the things you just don't get. With a normal name, because Dylan is one of those names, and we are dragging on a bit, but it's a name that it's a little bit timeless. I still feel like it's got a place in the world. And when I was younger, I was sort of like, I didn't like my name, but then I was like, you know what? No, I do like it.
We're the first of the Dylans though.
That's a thing.
Because when I do a school visit or that, there are Dylans.
There is?
Yeah, bro, they're coming. There's
D-Y's, L-A-N's?
D-Y-L-A-N's. Yeah, okay. So I feel like I don't know many Dylans our age, especially not many, I don't know, any older.
We're peaking at the right time.
So we started a trend, I guess. I mean, our parents did, but we'll claim it. But they're coming, brother. So we have to enjoy it while we, because there's like a, but there's so many 12-year-old Dylans out there.
We love that.
But it's a great name.
Shout out to any Dylan out there. And if you're not spelling it right, there's still change. You can change it to the correct way. But yeah. In saying that, be yourself. Now, moving on, my friend, because there's so much to touch on today. We're just chatting off air before. And I genuinely don't think there is anything you're not doing at the moment, which I love because I'm a go-getter.
Except walking.
Okay, that was a good start. Very good, yeah, zinger. Well done. Now, the funny part about this is the fact that we're going to touch on all these things. I want to know, though, the bubbly man we see today, this extremely handsome, charismatic,
this is good.
Talented man we see today.
I like this.
How did it start? Was it always like this for you? Did you always have this charisma? Were you always positive? Were you always have this amazing mindset? What was it like as a kid?
It was a roller coaster ride. When I was younger, I was really proud of the person that I was. I didn't really notice I had a disability. So if you don't know much about my story, so I've been in a wheelchair my whole life. I was born with a tumor wrapped around my spinal cord, the size of like half a watermelon. And so I was like a 9.5-pound baby, poor mum. And I was crook, man. And they cut it out when I was a couple of days old. And it was pretty touch and go, to be honest. And I kind of shy over that because I don't dwell on it. Mm-hmm. But retrospectively, I probably had about 10 to 15 operations in the first 3.5 years of my life, flatlined a couple of times. You know, my parents got told to take a photo one night, which I only found out about this when I wrote my book. They got told to take a photo because I probably wasn't going to be there in the morning because I had a life-saving shot of steroids and that. And then I went to, you know, I hit about 3.5 and then I was all good medically, to be honest. I've been pretty lucky that I've never really been back since. And I went to primary school and I really loved school. I loved playing footy. I was more of a stepladder though than a participant because vertical leap, not one of my fortes, but I didn't really notice about my disability. And then, so I was a pretty happy kid, confident, enjoyed who I was. And then 12, 13, 14, it was like a click of the finger moment where everything changed. I got bullied. It started that I couldn't keep up with my friends as much. They became less patient, which was fair enough too, because when you're 13, you don't, oh, hang on, I got away from my mate in the wheelchair.
Like, yeah.
Fair enough. But it was more the, you know, I got bullied about my disability. I got called a cripple and a spastic everywhere that I went. And for me, they're words that actually have a real negative connotation. And I actually fully started believing them. And I mean, people that listen to your podcast, we're in the age bracket where, you know, you might still use words like that. Like, how many beers did you have on Saturday?
Oh, 100%.
Mate, I'm a spastic. You're a spastic. Or, Dill, you're a retard. You drop something, whatever. And, you know, everywhere I went, the cripples here. And I started believing them wholeheartedly. And yeah, man, I was not the bubbly guy I am now. All I ate was Doritos and cheesy nuggets from Red Rooster. I was obese, played PlayStation, didn't go to school, hated myself. And the person that I am now and the life I live, if you had told me then it was going to happen, I would have told you to get fucked because I had no desire, no passion, but most importantly, no proudness in who I was. And it was tough for me.
What changed, man? Like, was there a crucible moment? Was there something that stuck out? Was there many sort of cases that just over time you believed? Or
It's part innate, part learnt, I think, confidence.
Yep.
The two things happen. One, the biggest regret I've ever had in my life, besides my horrible fucking haircuts that I had when I was
There are some real bad ones, man.
Horrible, was I didn't tell anybody about what I was going through. I think we as people are too stoic in everyday life and we're happy to celebrate the positives, but when something negative's going on, we just don't talk about it. I didn't tell anyone and I'm an idiot because if I had told my brother, my brother Zach, who's my best mate, how I was feeling, he would have helped me straight away. But I felt like a burden on him, my family. So I didn't tell anyone. As soon as I started talking about it, I felt better. And another thing, a mate of mine was having a house party and I felt like I had friends at school, but I just wasn't getting invited anywhere out of school. And I thought that was because they hated me because I was different, right? And I'd built up this narrative in my head and a mate of mine was having a party and I didn't get invited. And I was like, that's bullshit. So I said to my brother, Zach, what do you do when you don't get invited to a party? And he said, well, me and my mates just jump the fence. Primo advice for your brother in a wheelchair. And I just decided to turn up, right? I had four UDLs, legend, and knocked on the door and my mate opened the door and he had this shocked look on his face. And I remember thinking, Dylan, you idiot, why'd you come? And he said, Dylan, mate, I'm sorry I don't invite you places. I got two stairs to get into my house or a couple more. I didn't really know how we would go about it. Now, I can get up two steps. You and I have been to places we probably talk about it
yep.
on this podcast together with stairs. Revs. We can get upstairs. We can do whatever we want. I don't need a carer. I can go to the bathroom. But my mates didn't know all this.
Yep.
They were embarrassed to talk about my disability with me. But more important than that, I was embarrassed to talk about my disability with them. I used to shy away from it because I wasn't proud of who I was. So it was like a sliding doors moment. And from that day on, I decided to never let my disability get in the way of anything I wanted to do. Talk about it whenever I felt like I needed to, be proud of it. And that's when my life changed forever.
It's unbelievable, man. And it shows that now, like you've just embraced it. You are the motto of your show, which is be yourself. Everyone else is taken. And we live that. We love it. Everyone, I think, that realizes that now, they realize how special it is when you can just be yourself. Question with that, though, in terms of your mate with the party. Do you think, the problem is sometimes people do feel uncomfortable to ask those tough questions, which actually makes it harder in that time?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I'll ask you right now. If you want to find out something about your able-bodied teammate at footy or your co-workers, what do you do?
Just ask them.
You just fucking ask them, don't you? All of a sudden, when you've got a disability, can't ask him, going to offend him.
Yeah.
How's it going to go? As long as you do it in a tactful way. So don't come up to me in a bar and go, hey, Dylan, why are you in a wheelchair? Or hey, Dylan, can you feel your dick or whatever, right?
Yep.
Which are my two most asked questions. Buy me a beer first at least. as long as you build up a rapport before you ask those questions, you can ask whatever you want, you know what I mean? And I think, it breaks my heart when I try and help, I hate the word help, but change perception so people with disability can get jobs. And what I always hear is, I was about to give this person with cerebral palsy and electric wheelchair a job, got to the final question. I was going to ask them, all right, what do you need in terms of your disability work? But I felt like I couldn't, so I gave the job to an able-bodied person.
Mm.
Ask them the question.
Yeah.
Right? And I think the more you talk about, race, religion, disability, sexual orientation, whatever, the more it's normalized, right? And I think disability is the one that's the least normalized now in society. So, it's about talking about that and things like that. And but it's also not up to them. It's a double-edged sword, right?
Yeah.
They can't, the onus isn't on able-bodied world to include me. I've got to meet them halfway.
You've got to be a part of it.
I've got to be a part of it. One of my favorite sayings is you've got to buy a ticket to win the raffle. If that kid's at home playing PlayStation still, am I going to the Paralympics? Am I talking to you right now? No way, because I'd just be at home. As soon as I put myself out there, this goes for anyone, if you see someone you like at a bar who thinks good looking, go ask them on a fucking date. If you want to get a job, a pay rise or a promotion, tell someone. They're not going to just find you sitting there, right? Whatever you put out in the world, things tend to happen. You got to make, I don't believe in luck as such, but you make your own luck because you put yourself in a situation where things can come. And it's hard, when you're disabled and you get knocked back from every bar you go to, you just stop going to bars. When you never go on a date, you don't go on Tinder because you just think, what's the point?
Yeah.
So it's about all of us showing that we are an accessible, inclusive place so people can get out there and do what they want.
You must, I suppose, take, that must be like everything you've done. You've won all Australians, you've won Oz Opens, you've won Wimbledon, you've won all these amazing things, you've written books, everything. But the one thing I feel would be the most special is having impact on people. And that's not just disabled people. That's, you know, you've had an impact on me. Like I said before, that story about just kicking ass, saying, nah, fuck this, I'm just going to go do it. Have you had any people, and I'm sure you have, but any stories stand out about any member of a disabled community that's gone like, you know what, I wasn't going to do this, but fuck it, you've done this for me.
Oh, look, I don't like...
There's millions.
Two to mine, yeah. No, but I mean, one, so I run a music festival called Ability Fest, right? It's a music festival like any other festival, like Splendor, like Beyond the Valley. We just have some added accessibility features so people with a disability can come with their able-bodied mates. We have elevated platforms, pathways. We have Auslan sign language interpreters signing every lyric on stage. Have you ever seen sign language to rap music?
I haven't.
It's like someone having an epileptic fit. It is impressive. There's like sensory quiet areas for people with sensory disabilities like autism. We've got everything, right?
Yep.
And all the proceeds go to my foundation to help, the Dylan Alcott Foundation, to help young kids with disabilities achieve their dreams. Anyway, we're there and I see this young kid. He's a guy comes to me. His name's Mark. He's in a electric wheelchair and he comes up and he's pretty much in tears and he comes up and he says, and his sister, and says, mate, I just want to say thank you. This is the best day of my life. Mm. Now he's 22 years old. He'd never been to the footy, the cricket, a shopping centre, a festival, anywhere with his mates in an environment that was fully inclusive and fully accessible. That was the first time, right? And I didn't do it for that reason. I just did it because I wanted to get loose and put on a good show and have a good time. And then, you know, a few months later, Mark passed away. And he actually also told that story to a mate of mine who was his doctor before he passed away. He told somebody that he didn't know about his best day.
Didn't know
life.
You knew them?
And that was my mate from school.
Yeah, I mean, I got goosebumps.
I got goosebumps too.
Yeah, fuck.
And I don't do it for that reason, man. But my purpose in life is not to win Grand Slams and gold medals. My purpose in life is to change perceptions so people, all people, but especially people with disabilities, can get out there and live the lives that they deserve to live. Everybody deserves to go to a festival and have a beer, deserves to go on a date, deserves to have a job, deserves to play sport, right? Everyone does. So it's about finding ways to do that. And that's why I get out of bed, brother. And tennis gives me that platform, which is cool. And it's people like you, friends of mine, who have helped me be me. Hey, and we joked about revs or whatever, but you're like, okay, upstairs. Mm. If you're not doing that, well, then I wasn't going out to places. You know, your producer Sam's a mate of mine from high school, and he knows because he's been one of them, but how good my mates are to never leaving me behind. That gave me the confidence to help me be who I am. And now it's just more the public as well because they actually might know my name or whatever it is. And, you know, all that really helps me with my mission, which is to try and keep smacking down those, you know, glass ceilings, as we call them, to help people get out and be the people they want to be.
Yeah, it's very special, man, very special. And I love that point there. You are who you surround yourself with. And I think that's a big thing that people realise going forward, like whether that be, you know, a time in your life, if it's a positive influence on you or a negative, it could be something that's affecting you, you know, the right crowd gets you to where you are. Like I've definitely, you know, through time cut some people that weren't good for me. And you can't know that without experience, but I think it's a huge point, for especially younger audience listening. Like,
yeah, I think also what's really hard when you get older is when it's not an excuse, but when you're busy or doing things, you also lose people you actually like because they think you're being a dog.
Yeah.
And it breaks my heart that it used to break my heart a lot more because I was like, no, I really like you. I'm just not there, right? And then I used to use sleep and it used to really affect me. But now you can't control other people's journeys and what they're on and how they think, right? You can just be you. And, you know, I can't control that. And I know that I love them and I'm trying to be a good person and I'm not being a dickhead and that's all I can do, you know? And, it's both, isn't it? You lose people you needed to lose, but sometimes you also might lose people that you don't want to. And as I'm getting old, I'm just turned 30 the other week, fucking old, bro, washed up.
Yeah.
So I'm starting to come to terms with that, which actually is a good thing because you feel a bit better.
Yeah, small circles, big checks, 2021.
I like that.
Talking about the festival, there's something that I actually didn't know and I'm ashamed that I didn't know this, but pre all of this, The festival scene was actually where you could name, but besides the sport, we'll touch on in a minute. The festival scene was where you actually made quite a name for yourself. And this was crowd surfing at festivals with Wu-Tang Clan.
Yeah,
yeah. Name a few of these. How did this come about? And did you know that this was going to, like, was it just an organic thing that just happened?
So I was at Coachella, might have heard of it, in LA.
Yeah,
I used to live in America. So I used to play college basketball at the University of Illinois in Champaign-Urbana, which is like an hour out of Chicago. Michael Jordan's son played on the able-bodied basketball team. And guess what? He was shit at basketball. Poor guy. That felt so bad.
Suck, man.
Jeff Jordan.
It's a bit like me with my dad, sort of, like not on that level.
Yeah, you're a little, you're like, shit. You made it to the league, at least.
Yeah.
He couldn't get a college. Anyway, so I went to Coachella, and I was with a few mates, and they were like, let's sit at the back, like fucking 250 meters away from Jay-Z. And I was like, I feel bad. So I'm like, no, let's go in, right? So we start at the back. It's like, it's kind of like watching the Red Sea part, or it's like I have leprosy, because you tap people on the shoulder and they just jump
straight away.
It's like a perfect pathway, right? So we're 50 meters from the front, and my mate puts 1 foot each side of my wheels and stands up on the back of my wheelchair, right? And I was like, that's, go for it. I've never done that. And he goes, oh, in return, I'll pick you up. And I was like, no way, that's dangerous. Anyway, he's like, come on. You know, we'd had a few. And he picked up, four blokes picked me up, and I crowd surfed in my chair, and Jay-Z stopped the show and was like,
Jay-Z,
give it up to my dude in the wheelchair right there. And then from then on, I called it the best seat in the house. And I've only ever been dropped once. It was at Groove in the Moo Festival. And I landed on a mate of mine, Dave Fallon. And I only got dropped once, and I didn't end up any more disabled than I started. He was worse for wear. Pretty much elbow dropped him in on top of his head. It was his fault though. Grab the wheel. If you grab the wheels, guess what? The wheels spin.
Yeah, it makes sense.
But I want everybody right now, obviously don't leave the podcast, but Google wheelchair crowd surf fail.
Is it you?
There's a video of it. That exact moment.
Link in the show notes.
I got shot by a sniper rifle.
Fuck.
It's actually fucking hilarious.
That's hectic. Matt, I want to talk about the way you sort of got into the media, I suppose, because I want to work backwards. I'm going media into the new sport, because that was the fundamentals of things and how it all processed. But media gigs, how did that start? Was it just the public speaking early days? And might I just add, by the way, I don't know if I sold that story well enough early when I said I first met you in 2015-16. You, like, I don't know if this was a part of it and it was something that I've taken to this day and I always speak about. You'd like mentioned, you put out into the universe everything you wanted to do. And you'd like said, I want to do this. I want to be on TV. I want to be on radio. I want to do these things. This was before you'd done it all. And now you're doing them. So like, how did the journey sort of go?
Yeah, well, little fact people actually might not know is, so when I was 17 years old in year 12, I actually won a Paralympic gold medal playing wheelchair basketball.
Yes.
So I was kind of the youngest ever wheelchair basketball gold medalist. And
horrific haircut, man.
Fucking horrible.
Like the worst
and
one.
No beard and barely any eyebrows.
Yeah.
So I didn't grow eyebrows till I was about 18. Weird. It's like two disabilities. And I kind of like this media stuff. So I actually just kept hounding, the ABC was broadcasting it, like just to get opportunities. And when you're 17 and you win gold, it's pretty cool. So. Yep. I got a lot of media ops and I was like, oh, I kind of like this. And then you kind of, I started doing a bit of like motivational speaking, but at schools. And then I was lucky that I went to a good school called Brian Grammar. I was good at public speaking and I got a scholarship to go to that school. I couldn't afford it. So I was very lucky from a family who had a young kid called Mark Comport who passed away when he was at Brian Grammar, had a disability. So they donated a scholarship. So
that's incredible.
I was super lucky. And, I had the knack for it. And then I realized the reason I had this all of a sudden big goal is when I was younger, when I turned on the TV, the radio, newspaper, I never saw anybody like me. No one. Zero, right? A little bit maybe the Paralympics and that, but I just didn't see anyone. And when I did, it was a road safety ad where someone drink drives, has a car accident. What's the next scene?
Guy in a wheelchair.
Crying.
Yeah.
Life over.
Yeah. That's fucked. Yeah.
Fuck off. That's not me.
Yeah.
It made me angry as a kid. Angry. I was like, we need to change that. You know what I mean? Why can't there be someone with a disability being normal, being funny, sexy, fucking whatever? So that's when I got this internal burning to do it. But also, I like sharing stories and telling my story.
Yeah.
Same as you. So it's just a good fit. But that is why I've had this passion to work so hard to make it happen. Did I think it would happen? No way. I got interviewed on Triple J. Afterwards, talked to the boss. I was like, one day I'd love to work here. just threw it out there. And then I was lucky enough to win gold in Rio in 2016 for tennis. A month later, I got a call. Hey, mate, I know you've never done radio or know how to do the buttons, but would you like a drop of Triple J? It's like, I would love that. You know, like, and it's because I put that out there.
Yeah.
And you learn on the fly. Like, at Triple J, you do all the buttons yourself.
Yeah.
Everything. I had one lesson, then I was live weekend arvos. I fucked it so bad. I had no idea what I was doing, bro. But that's where you learn, right?
Yeah.
But I also don't take for granted that I've had so many opportunities a lot of people don't get, but I hustled my ass off for those opportunities.
I feel as well, like listening to a lot of things, people would look and be like, oh, you know, this guy, he's won gold at the Olympics, he's playing tennis, yeah, he's been given these, like, that is not the fact whatsoever. But can you talk us through some of the setbacks you might have had getting employment? Because I suppose they're the ones that, I suppose, is a good way to talk about it, because that's something that you've built your foundation around now.
Good question. Get this going, Q&A.
Thanks, man.
Look out, Hamish. I went to a job interview when I was 19. Won't say the company. You know it, though. And it was like for a student SBM, student brand manager.
Was it Howie Games?
It was close.
Yeah.
Okay. Shout out to Howie. Love your work. Yeah. And it was selling, like, the marketing this product within university. I went there, knocked on the door. I didn't tell them I was in a wheelchair, because if I clicked yes, I'm in a disability, I wouldn't have got the job interview, right? So you just have to lie, which is disgusting, yes?
Mm.
I knocked on the door, they walked down the stairs, they go, oh, so we didn't know you're in a wheelchair. I was like, oh, it's all good. They're like, oh, the job interview's upstairs. And I was like, oh, sorry, I just come down. They're like, look, we're just going to not do it. And they just shut the door. Hectic. And this shit happens every day to people. And, you know, when my wheelchair gets left on an airplane for an extra hour and they don't bring it up and I have to wait there an hour longer than you, they're buying me wine. They're being nice to me because they know my name and I've got followers.
Yeah.
What if you're a 40-year-old lady with MS, little kid with a disability? That person's just getting stuck there, right? So, you know, that's why I try and I think it's way better to call in rather than call out. I very rarely call out. I don't like people that just yell.
Do you mean by that? So call in?
Call in to the person that's done it. Don't just call them out online.
Okay, yeah, cool.
Don't just abuse people, because you don't get anywhere.
No.
You know when people just yell about their thing they're passionate about? You're like, fuck off.
Yeah, right? It's annoying.
The best way is to show by example, right? And it upsets, but you call in. Very rarely do I call out or whatever. I did have to do it at the US Open in 2020, which we might talk about later. But
yeah.
The reason that I do, and you know, people might think, yeah, Dylan Alcott's a flog and he's annoying and all that shit. And you know what? You can go for that if you want, but you don't understand, for people, it's really hard sometimes. And if I can use my platform to help in even the smallest little way, I've got to do that, right? And not hectically, but it's just something that I feel like I have to. And there's also like little things. When I first got a job on TV to do the tennis, I got asked to interview Rafael Nadal. Have you heard of him?
Yes.
Nice arms.
Yes.
Got better arms than me, way better, and legs, clearly. And he was on court, right? And they're like, oh, we've got this awkward thing. How are you going to interview Rafael Nadal? He's standing up, you're sitting down. Do you know what I said? I'm just going to hold a microphone to his mouth like everybody else.
Yeah.
And their eyes, like their head blew off. They're like, oh, that's a lot easier than I thought.
Yeah.
Does it matter that he's standing and I'm sitting down? Of course not. But they've just never seen it before. And then as soon as you do it once, it just seems to be normal now. And I still pinch myself sometimes when I see me interviewing Roger or Rafa or Kiggs, Nikiros, whatever, just seeing a guy in a wheelchair interview an able-bodied person, it's just cool to see, right? And I don't want to be the only voice. I don't want to be the only example. I want there to be people with disability as actors, musicians, politicians. You know, I even get sick of myself sometimes in the sense that there needs to be more people. So, but yeah, there was heaps of setbacks. And I think also you get better at broadcasting, in particular in the media. And the trick is, 100%, you have to, as you said, it's your slogan, you have to be authentic to you.
Yeah.
Because I was trying to shy away from my disability.
You were trying to be like Jim Courier. You know what I mean? Yeah.
Novak Djokovic.
Yeah.
He's actually a good bloke, by the way, Jim, if anyone doesn't like him. Absolute ledge. Yeah, once I started being me, fully taking the piss out of my disability, being me like I normally am, but broadcasting, I seem to have success because people can relate to you then. Otherwise, you're just blowing smoke up their ass. And I think that is why your podcast is successful, because you are you. You're not sucking up to Alistair Clarkson or whatever. You're just being you. And I think that is powerful, especially in a world where we're all often trying to be someone else because we're not actually proud of who we are.
Oh, 100%. And I think that that's – why now, like looking back at things, there's like been so many times where like I wasn't true to that, and you just feel so you even feel worse about yourself when you like you don't do it.
Especially, and you'll know now retrospectively on the sporting field.
Oh, it's
when
so
you're
bad.
Like, I should have done that, but I know Mick Malthouse wanted me to do that.
Yeah, man. Oh, that was my career.
And you just next minute you're done.
Yeah.
And you're like, fuck, why didn't I just do what I wanted? Right? Politicians. I'm looking at Malcolm Turnbull at the moment. He's writing all this stuff that he wants to do. I'm like, bro,
You had your chance, yeah.
Why don't you do it?
Yeah.
And he probably regrets that. And I know he would, right? So you got to get busy living and you got to do it while you get the chance.
I love that. And I love the fact as well, though, that with things that you've learned, it's never too late. Like, you don't get down on yourself if you fuck up a situation or something, because you've always got, like, if I didn't fuck up my footy thing, I wouldn't be sitting here now with you doing this. So it's sort of a blessing in disguise. Yeah. The basketball scene, I suppose, is something that I want to touch on, because I've always been a big, like a sportsman. Like, I like sports.
Yep.
Actually, that's a lie. I liked football. I didn't really love sports, but I liked football. I liked playing team sports. And I suppose singular sports is something that's a little bit different in terms of tennis. It wigs me out, tennis, because like I can't watch it.
It
gives me so much anxiety watching it, because it's just like match point, you know, like you've got to hit this point at this time and you can't win this unless you're doing that.
The biggest difference is there's no clock.
Oh man, it's so hard. You don't know exactly. You don't know when things are finished and you don't know how long they could go for. It could be X amount of sets. It could be this amount of points, you know, juice advantage, all this sort of stuff. And my question to that is, there's a point where one of your good friends, Daniel Ricciardo.
Danny Rick, good man.
And I want to get your opinion on this, because you said something like the fact that when you were playing basketball and when he was playing team sports and when you play footy, you can play the best game you've ever played in your life and your team can lose.
Yeah.
Or you can play the worst game you've ever played in your life and your team can win. Whereas when you're playing an individual sport, and especially in tennis and F1 and any individual sport, I suppose, if you're at your best and you do the things you need to do, 9 times out of 10, you're gonna win.
Yep.
How do you feel about that?
Yeah, I think when you're having a shocker in a team sport, you just sub yourself out, brother. Like, and I mean that. Like,
what do you mean?
Like, you know, you just get on the bench. I think the biggest thing is the hardest transition for me is in a team sport in particular, they will have scoreboards and clocks mostly, right? If you're up by 30 points with a minute to go, what do? You hold the ball and you win. In tennis, in an individual sport, you have to do something to win.
Yeah.
Right? I don't really, you know, luckily no one knew who I was when I first came back to tennis. I lost my first 9 finals in a row.
So you get to the final?
Yeah, lose.
And choked?
Choked. Okay. I called David Wagner, my arch nemesis.
In Wagner.
Yeah. Played 50 times or so over the years. Because I'd be up 5-2, 6-2, 5-2, and then I'd choke because I have to do something to win. Like, that was the hardest thing for me to come across from. But also, people say, what was better? Wheelchair basketball gold or wheelchair tennis gold? Hard to say. Because one of the best things about a team sport is when we won.
You celebrate.
We celebrated with each other, right? We actually went to the Great Wall of China. We had a little, we had a dude called Jeffrey who was our like translator. And we're like, Jeffrey, you want to go to the, this is a great story. I feel like this is my book, but I forgot. I haven't told us in years. Jeffrey goes, we want to go to the accessible part of the Great Wall. He's like, yeah, got you sorted. Went to some like mini bottle. I picked up like 8 crates of long necks, right? So there's 8 guys of the team went, 4 of them are amputees, so they walk with a prosthetic, the other 4 are in wheelchairs, right? We get to the only inhabited part of the wall. There is 400 steps to get up. Elevator on the other side, right? So we get there, we're like, fuck, what are we going to do? Right? I'm 17, got my gold medal, I've had 1 long neck, I'm hammered.
Yeah.
About to piss my pants, just fucking I'm on one, right? Anyway, Jeffrey recruits these 4 Chinese dudes, we're paying $50 each, and they carry all 4 guys in wheelchairs to the top, 400 steps each, and down, with our gold medals on the Great Wall of China. You don't get any better than that.
No.
It's one of the best things.
Did they do it?
Yeah, they did it.
Oh, they did it.
They carried us all the way to the top. We drank beers on top, come down.
How many was there?
It was 4 guys in wheelchairs, had to go 400 steps each, so it's 1,600 steps.
$50.
$50, that was stoked.
I'd do it for free.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, you do it just because you like me. That was amazing. However, in an individual sport, when I won gold, I celebrated with my family.
Yeah, it's good. Yeah, it's very nice.
It's beautiful.
Yeah.
And what athlete gets the best of both worlds? Not many. I'm so lucky that I've had that opportunity, to be honest. And, you know, sport is the best part about sport is not winning medals and Grand Slams. For me, when I hated myself, I went to a tennis tournament. The Thaguna Open, it was called, outside of Albury. Haven't been back since, but I'm sure you're a big hit in Thaguna.
Oh, yeah. We have plenty of listeners
in Thaguna, yeah. And I got there. I saw a guy in a wheelchair. He's a guy in a car. He had kids and a wife. he got out of the car. He's in a wheelchair. I was like, fuck, you can drive a car in a wheelchair? Mm. Didn't know that. Kissed his wife. Oh my God, is that his and missus? Saw his kids. Does he fuck? He's had kids. Yeah. Right? I'm telling you. I didn't know he could do that shit, man. I'm telling you. The best part about sport for all of us is the social aspect of it.
100%.
It's not winning.
I miss that so much even myself. It's like I don't miss competing. I don't really miss like going in there on game day, but I miss the locker room. I miss, you know, my teammates, and I miss there's something, you can have a personality, but when you're pushing yourself and you're working hard with someone for a common goal, or whether that be your trainer or your teammates, that's the stuff you can't really buy.
Exactly. And, you know, I'm not far off. You know, I don't know how many more years I've got left of playing sport because I do so many other things and things like that. But that's something that I'll definitely miss, that social element of it, because it's, you know, we're lucky to have it, aren't we, man? And even though it doesn't, you might have it for less years than someone else. You look back at other people who haven't had that, and I think we've been in a privileged position where it's been our job to hang out with your mates and be a dickhead.
100%.
And perform as well. So
you learn so much from it. And you learn, I think, again, a part of probably the basketball team that you played in. I know there's been other teams, but my favourite thing about sport and teams in general that I've reflected on now post doing it is the fact that, like, you meet so many people that you would never have hung out with if you didn't play sport. And like, there's guys there that are fucking play PlayStation all day, but then they come to the club, they're footy. There's guys that do other things. There's so many just different walks of life from all around countries that just come in and you make friends with people you never thought you would.
And you learn, right? You learn about cultures and personalities and how to be a better person, sometimes how to be a worse person.
Yeah.
Like, but it's all about that. It's about evolving and changing and things like that. And how did you go when you left footy? I know it's hard sometimes. Mm. How did you handle that? Like, do you stay in touch with the boys? Or?
Oh, definitely. I think it's one of those things we chatted about earlier. Like, there's always guys that you're going to stay in touch with. I'd try and stay in touch with everyone if I could.
Yeah, it's hard.
But I think there's a massive thing, and Mick Moldas actually told me this once, and it's like you can only ever have 5 people in your life. So by that I mean, like, obviously there's a lot of people, but 5 people that are important to you.
Your go-tos.
So I think as soon as I knew that, I identified, like, I'm not dropping off anyone here, but like, you got to put all your energy into those 5, and that might change a little bit, but they're probably your certains, you know, like your missus and your family and these sort of people.
Where am I on that list for you?
You're 6. Okay. Yeah. Cool. So
hey, after this, yeah, see how many views it gets.
You could be full.
Okay, good.
Yeah. I'll drop mum and dad off. Yeah. But yeah, it could be impressive. So I think that that's a big thing, but yeah, like I said, when I left, I was like, I was a bit like yourself in terms of I love doing a million things. I can't do one. Yeah. And that was the biggest thing for me playing footy. I was like, fuck, I can't just do footy and that's it. I had to do podcast, footy, invest in this guy's business that, you know, and do this and do that. Like, I get really scared when I'm not doing enough.
Yeah.
And I feel like really agitated.
I think that also, like, people say, man, you do so much stuff to me, but I need that because I'm not naming names, but we all know athletes in sports.
Who
retire and lose it because they've got a pocket full of money, no mates, and no life experience, right? That is a hard burden for them to have.
It's a lot.
And it keeps me, when I play tennis, I love it because I'm happy to be there because I'm doing other shit, right? Like, I enjoy it. If I lived and bred tennis, I wouldn't win. I wouldn't enjoy it. I'd be retired. It's because I have a beautiful partner, Chantel, great mates, you know, work, things like the podcast, things like that, that keep me fresh. And it's important. I think it's important that it's, you hear it all your whole life, work-life balance, real tool-y thing. Like, you sound like a dick saying it, but it's true.
It's so true.
Because it makes you work better.
So true.
Because you have that balance. And people like see me at a festival and I might have heaps of beers. Like, fuck, it's all the organ. He was off his head, right?
Yeah.
Fuck yeah. Because
you got to relax.
I needed that, bro.
Yeah, you need to release.
Do you do that? Yeah. I know you're a lawyer or an accountant, but do you like doing accountancy every day? And of course not.
Yeah.
Another one is people go to me, do you want to have a hit of tennis on the weekend? I was like, I will, as long as you do my contract law for me.
Yeah.
And they go, why would I do that? Yeah. And I go, I love tennis, but that's my job, right? I need to have a break as well. And I think that's why I enjoy it still, because I am firm on that kind of stuff. You know, I go to Splendor, I have a good time. And it keeps you in the right times, because then I enjoy it when I get back, I work my ass off and, you know, try and win tennis tournaments.
Love it, man. And you do that better than anyone. Your balance is incredible, and it's something that I aspire to have. And I think you've got like 63 businesses now, which we'll touch on shortly, but it's been extremely impressive.
Thousands of Aussies trust Aussie Broadband to keep them connected to the world, even when they're on the go. Because as well as reliable home internet, Aussie Broadband also offers flexible mobile plans with super generous data allowances and no lock-in contracts. Their 100% Australian-based support team are ready to help you make the switch. It only takes a few minutes. Aussie Broadband, the actual Aussie way. Search Aussie Broadband Mobile to find out more. T's and C's apply.
Tennis question. I've never chatted to a tennis player before. And again, I touched on it a bit earlier in terms of like match point situations and these sort of shit, man. Like it's honestly makes me sweat thinking about it. Like when I'm watching tennis, I'm just like, fucking hell, like what's going on here? I don't think that that's, and I'll hopefully your opinion on this, but does it come to skill there or is it all mindset?
It is very much mindset. I would say 80-20. Do you know who wins any sporting match? Look at Dusty Martin, the grand final.
Yeah.
It's not the person that plays the best. It's the person that thinks the clearest. We can all play, ooh, right? You like that?
That's got me a little bit.
When Dusty's on the boundary in the granny,
he knows what he wants.
He threw a dummy. No one thought he was gonna. Clear thought. Went round, snapped it.
Yeah.
To think that through that in that moment.
Well, even to do a snap from the boundary in a grand final, you know, I'd be so scared that I'd get subbed off.
He's like, got clarity of thought. Right? Yeah. He knows what he's doing. And this takes a long time to learn. And I work with a guy called Ben Crowe, who I know you get a big stiffy for. He's a beautiful man.
Yes.
Yeah. He's been on the podcast. I've listened. Crowe's a legend, right? And I lost the biggest match of my life. I was trying to win the Grand Slam, right?
Is this the first one? Or
the US Open in 2019. I won every slam.
Okay. Yes.
When I got to the US Open, I was going to win the slam, right? And I was telling myself this. I need to win this, right? Because I need to justify myself as a disabled athlete. I need to win every slam to be compared to Ash Barty, say, winning one slam. I need to win Australian of the Year so I can influence my community and help people with disability. I can do all this shit, right? What do you think I was thinking about when I was playing?
That.
Fucking that.
Yeah.
And guess what? I lost 6-1, 6-1 to a guy I haven't lost to in 3 years. Why? And I thought, you know, I know Ben talks about the mindsets and things like that. And I thought that I'm a public speaker, I could not give a shit about my disability. I'm so proud being disabled. I love it. If I could do stem cell research and walk, it could not pay me enough. You could pay me $10 million. I wouldn't do it. Right. Because the Dylan in a wheelchair is a much better version of any other Dylan that I could have been.
Yes.
Okay. So I wouldn't do it. Change it. Right. That's all I talk about. And then I get on the tennis court. What was I thinking? I got to justify myself disability.
Mm.
I was like, holy shit, I never made the connection between the two. Right? And in those moments of pressure, of performance, you need your mind to be clear on what you're doing, not all that stuff, right? And the reason that was hard for me is I had an expectation to win, right? What I've learned, to work right, you can have a goal to win, but you can't have an expectation. You have an expectation just to be you. And if you lose, well, then you are you. What can you do?
Mm.
And now, you know what? I don't think about winning Australian of the Year. I don't think about winning the Grand Slams. I think about having fun out there, doing my thing, because I don't know how long I'm going to be doing it for. And guess what? Played the Australian Open 5 months later, and I fucking had the best tournament I've ever played. Played on Rod Laver. When I played my first Australian Open, 2014, 5 people were there watching me. 5. 4 of them, my family. 1 random. 5 people. That year, 2020, Oz Open, there was 12,000 people at Rod Laver. 1 million people watched it live on Channel 9.
Wow.
It outrated the Big Bash semifinal, a wheelchair tennis match.
That's sick, bro. Unbelievable.
It's unbelievable. And there was 500 kids with disabilities there. Right?
So cool. Like,
and I know I'm the lucky one who gets that. I want that to permeate down to other athletes with a disability. But that was all just based on the fact that it is so mindset, right? Especially tennis. What sport do you stand out there for 3 hours by yourself having a breakdown?
Golf might be close. You can see how much they're like, you know, you're all in your head.
Golf might be close, but they've got a caddy, yeah?
Yeah.
You become a fucking crazy person out there. And you can see it. I love tennis because you'll be watching someone pumping someone and you go, oh, here it is. They are about to lose it. And guess what? They lose it. And you're like, whoa, tennis. It's just like this crazy game that you have so much time and so many thoughts. So everyone can play, not everybody can think.
Yeah.
Everybody goes to the gym, no one sees a psychologist. I say that I'm seeing my mindset coach, Ben Crowe, goes, people go, you're right, what's wrong?
Yeah.
And I say this to my mates who are struggling in their relationships, at work, whatever, go see someone. There's no stigma. Are you going to the gym to do bicep curls? Yes. Have you ever seen a psychologist? Why the fuck would I do that? What's wrong with you? It's not the same thing. Do you know who sees a psychologist? Rafael Nadal, not bad at tennis.
Yeah.
Roger Federer, he's pretty good too, has a psychologist. Like, Tiger Woods, work with Ben Crowe. They're all pretty good sport. Serena Williams. So, like, there's no shame in it, but we, as individuals think there is a stigma about talking about that mental health side of it. So,
So true, man. I'm just sorry, I was really involved in that. But it was crazy because this morning before you came in, being in a sporting environment for so long, we had psychologists on hand. So, if anything was ever wrong, you go and talk to them and all this sort of thing.
Did you utilize it though?
I did, but not to the full potential I should have at the time.
You don't tell them everything sometimes.
No, you don't. Yeah, because you always think, fuck, are they going to go tell the coaches or something like that?
Yeah.
But it was funny this morning because I was like, you know what? Fuck, I need to go and speak to someone. Like, I need to go and speak to someone, just get some thoughts out and do some things. Because I always say on the show, I preach all this shit, but like, if I'm not doing it myself, that makes me fucking, I'm just talking shit, really.
Yep.
And I called a hotline that we've got through the AFLPA where you can basically go and see someone. It's amazing access to get in touch. And I spoke to the guy on the phone. He was awesome. And he's like, what's wrong? And I was like, mate, actually nothing's wrong. Like, I'm actually totally fine. But like, I just don't want something to happen. Then I get to a stage where it's like, shit, I just want to keep checking in to make sure that I'm sweet. But like, I'm totally fine. But I want to just keep going because I love learning about how I can just get stronger and stronger.
Mate, you're just getting better.
Yeah.
I think growth is one of the things that – so I don't write goals up on the board. Some people write all their goals up and they go do it. I don't do that. I just kind of think of something and I call it a get shit done attitude. I'm like, hey, I want to do some acting after I finish tennis, which I
love this, yeah.
Right? So I'm going to write a script and try and do some acting.
You will, bro. There's no doubt about it.
There you go. I got no idea what I'm doing, but I'm just telling you now.
Yeah.
We might look back and go, remember when you said that?
Yeah.
But that's it. But that is about growth. It's about doing things and getting better. And mindset and mental health and improvement is about effort. And
it's hard.
It's hard,
harder than physical. It's anything harder than
way
so much
harder,
physical.
Because you've got to air all your bullshit.
It's a brain as a muscle.
No one likes to air their bullshit, right? Everyone keeps it internal. But as soon as you air it, you feel better. Like I did. Remember when just going back to me as a kid, I felt better. I could grow and I could develop strategies to feel better. And if you think I'm that person who could benefit, it's free as well. You go to your doctor, you get a mental health plan, it's free. If you hate it, go, hey, deal, that was bullshit what you said. Fair enough.
Well, I have a rule. You try everything twice.
Yep.
That's everything. My everything.
Hey.
Everything.
That's my boy.
Exactly. On that as well, mate, this is something that I really want to know. Obviously, we see the man you got today. You're so powerful in everything you do. There's no way of saying this, but you must have a good team around you. I'm saying, who are your people, I suppose, that have got you to where you are now, and who are like your mentors? Is there someone that's really helped you become that person?
Yeah, I think it started with my family. So my brother Zach, and it's probably one of the stories that goes around the most, but we used to always fight over the TV remote as kids, and we had Foxtel, very lucky, and he used to always fight over it, and he'd always run into the hallway a lot faster than I could and get the fucking control bastard. And then he would watch whatever he wanted, and then he'd go to the bathroom and I'd crawl over and I'd pick it up.
Yep.
Be like, shit, yeah, I got control. And then after a while, smart guy, whenever he got up to go to the bathroom, remember he's like 6'4" now, so he was 9, I was like 6. He'd get up, get the control, put it on top of the fridge where I couldn't reach it. Jerk, yeah. Come back, pick it up, wouldn't even look at me, like just act like nothing had happened. I was like, you absolute wanker. Best thing he ever did, right? It would have been so easy for Zach to go, I feel sorry for my poor sale brother Dylan. I'm going to wrap him in cotton wool and give him whatever he wants. And a lot of people, kids, especially kids with disability, are wrapped in cotton wool for that reason because they are different. Like I see little kids and I go, hello, what's your name? Oh, my name's Steph. Steph, what's your disability? The mum goes, she hasn't got a disability. And I'm like, well, she's in a wheelchair. So don't tell her she hasn't got a disability because then she's going to be embarrassed about it.
Mm.
You know what I mean?
Embrace.
Or let her speak. I'm like, what's your name? And they go, her name's Steph. I go, what's your name? Her name's Steph. What's your name? Steph. It's like, let your kid be your kid, right? So my brother and my family start
huge.
The biggest thing ever. I think in terms of my media career, I remember, we talked about putting yourself out there. I just was at a, he tells the story much better than I do, but I was at a, like some, lunch thing because I'd won gold and I was in a suit and I saw this guy who I was like, oh, he's a good looking unit. I remember him off TV. Hamish McLaughlin went up. And I said, Hamish, I want to get a job on TV. What do I do? And he wrote down his number and we just stayed in touch. And he got me, gave me some pretty simple stuff. Started playing tennis, actually. He worked for Seven Sport. Got me a chance. And we commentated together for the first time. Bang, there you go. And I think it's, I think there are people that really love having that is my mentor. I just like asking questions of whoever.
Yeah.
I'm not like, that's my guy, that's my coach, my trainer, my whatever. I think that It's just about asking everybody everything if you want. Mm. You know what I mean? And if they don't want to speak to you, they'll burn you. Who cares, you know? And I think the biggest thing as well, as you said, team-wise, I've got, you know, the best team around. I've got a great coach, my doubles partner, Heath, my beautiful partner, Chantel, been together 2 years and the luckiest guy in the world. She's a sexologist, a doctor of sex.
Yeah, I'm not going to pretend that I don't know that. That's very impressive.
She's a doctor of sex. So the first time I was with her, I describe it as having a tennis lesson off Roger Federer, because she's the Roger Federer. She's the master.
Yes.
So I was pretty nervous, but luckily
that's performance anxiety.
Luckily, she'd never had sex with someone in a wheelchair, so it was 15-all.
Okay.
And she's the best person I've ever met. I love her so much. I've got a great manager, Mark, Georgie, who runs my foundation, but also helps me out personally. You know, mates, it's a big team, but it's also a small team when it has to be. You know, I see tennis players walk around with 15 people in their entourage and they lose because there's so many distractions. So it's about having a big team around you, but also educating them about what you need when you need it. The example of my dad, he's a legend, right? Name's Martin. He'll listen to this for sure, right? But he gets so nervous when I play. I hit a fault and he goes like this. And I hear it and I have to go, shut up, right? And he's like this. He was like a roller coaster. Right, up and down. I love him. So for years I told him about, I need you to stay level.
Yeah.
I hit the best shot in the world, 2 claps, good boy. If I hit the worst shot in the world, 2 claps, good boy. Because that anxiety comes on
trickles
me.
Trickles to you, yeah.
So I actually was talking to Crowley about this and my Chantel recommended, write him a letter. So I wrote him a letter. 3 years I wrote him a letter about what it means. I'm not having to go at you. I love you. I want the support. But just how it affects me. And he's like, I get it now. And now, you should see him.
Sits there.
He's like a security guard.
Doesn't move.
Arms crossed. Just fucking not
his heart,
shit.
Man. It would just be beating out of his chest.
Makes me laugh now, which I like. Because I put a smile on my face. I see him just about to die.
Yeah.
My mum, love her, Reese, she always says, bad luck, TD, when I hit a bad shot. And I used to go, it's not fucking bad luck. It's a bad shot.
Yeah.
Fuck you. Fuck. And then I get angry. So now I said, Mum, don't say bad luck. Because I know it's not bad luck. It's just a bad shot, which is okay.
We move on.
You're allowed to hit
them. Yeah.
So now she doesn't say bad luck. It's crazy how crazy we are. We're all like that. And you'll be playing great footy, then Mick Malthouse says something. You're like, what the hell? Why didn't Mick Malthouse notice these 27 good things I did? And then all of a sudden you can't play anymore.
Yeah.
So it's such an interesting, you know, dynamic, isn't it?
Oh, God. I don't want to pretend I know it because I still get rattled by a few of those things. They wake me up at night. Mate, people would see you now as well and what you've done and think, you know, you're on radio, you're all these places, you're doing everything. I want to ask you this. Do you get much hate?
I mean, I did host the footy show for 5 weeks.
Yeah, so okay. Yeah.
No, that went well. Got paid though.
That's good.
Look, it is hard when you're in the limelight, right? Because you read that shit.
Yes.
Right? The first comment on this, right, you're going to put up that I'm the guest and someone's going to write, oh, it's going to be a really good podcast, right? I'll bet you $20.
Yeah, okay.
Now they're going to write it and everyone's going to like it, right? That doesn't affect me at all because I've heard all that shit before. Oh, don't drink and drive. Uh-huh. Oh, have you got a license? Uh-huh. You know, all that kind of shit. But I think the hardest part is when you're trying to do good and you read things that are negative. It was really hard for me originally, right?
Yeah.
Do you know the best thing about hosting the footy show was for me? I was lucky. I didn't get as much hate as the other people up there, but I got a lot of hate. And guess what? I didn't give a fuck. It made me realize they're just nameless faces with a picture of a car as their display pic.
Yeah.
Who write cribble jokes, right? Some of them are pretty funny. My favorite one was, what is old mate Wheelie No Legs doing hosting the footy show? Dude can't kick. And I was like, got legs, just don't work. But the hard part about that is my mum reads that and goes, have you seen my dad? I go, don't worry about that. But I will say this, two things. When I needed friends as a kid, I needed everybody. No, I felt no one liked me, so I was obsessed with everybody liking me. I needed to do that, hustle it, to get people to like me. But then it became like, oh, well, they have to like me because otherwise I'm going to get left out and get bullied and blah, blah, blah. So that internal complex was hard for me when I started working the media. Now, I am lucky. I was on Triple J Breakfast, the most ruthless text line, and I got nothing, right? But you know, the more and more yourself you put out there is you do get stuff. The big one for me is like at the US Open when the US Open went ahead with the tennis.
Yep.
And they put on the press conference, blah, blah, blah. And I was waiting for the wheelchairs, not mentioned. That's weird. Looked at the press release, no mention of wheelchair. They cancelled it without asking us, without telling us, without consultation, and they weren't going to tell us.
Just limbo, now, yeah.
I was devastated. That's bigger than tennis for me. Mm. Remember that job interview I told you about?
Yeah.
That's feels, that. Yeah. They made the decision, not me. When I go to a bar and they say, no, I've got stairs, you're a fire hazard, you can't fucking come in. They made that decision, not me. That's not fair. It made me sad. That's why I called it out. Now, every man, 95% of them are good, but there's so many people, oh, fuck this wanker, all about himself, wants to play tennis. I couldn't give a shit about that. It was about, I had to do that to represent my community. I remember sitting on the toilet where I do my best work going, I don't want to write these tweets because I'm going to get destroyed. I didn't want to do it, but I had to do it for what I stand for.
Fucking oath.
Right? And then I did. And you know what? There are people that aren't going to like you. And they might see one ANZ ad on TV and you interviewed once and go, that guy's a flog.
Yeah.
Guess what? You're entitled to your opinion. And I can't change that. I know that I am always trying to be a good person. And people that know me personally hopefully think so too. That's all I can control, right? And I think we all, you know, when you're at, people listening right now, you're at work, right? And everyone loves you, but that one person says something negative. What do you think about
that?
Everybody that loves you, or the one person that calls you a cripple or a spastic, in my case. I realize there's 10,000 other legends that are worth, you know, your time and things like that. And I'm lucky that I've come to terms with it. There are a lot of athletes, musicians, whatever, who don't.
Mm.
And it's hard. And you agree.
Oh, that's
the more and more you get more publicity, bro, the more people come in, don't they?
Oh, mate, that's the thing now. I think like when I first started, it was obviously all positive stuff. But now that the show's growing and I'm putting myself out there being like, no, this is my thing, this is my calling, so I want to do. You obviously see people comment stuff that's not like positive and they're obviously not going to like you. I take that back probably to two things. So obviously I go, those people don't know me. But I think another massive one that only really hit me like middle of last year, and I'd been told this early days in my podcast with Rex Hunt, and I think you'd love this. And he goes, if you don't have critics, you don't have anything. Because if you don't have people that don't agree with you or don't like what you're doing, you're not hitting like enough people to even get it back. So I think in a funny way, now if I do see something that I'm like, well, fuck, that's good. Yep. Like it's actually take it as a compliment.
And the biggest thing I say to people, right, like if you're listening, if you think I'm a flog and you see me out, come up and say g'day and see how I go. And guess what? If I'm a flog, then sign the contract that guy's a flog.
Yeah.
But I pride myself on being always saying g'day, being a good bloke, trying to be a good bloke.
You know what I mean? Do that, man.
And so, you know, if I burn you twice, then write me off for sure. But also, I couldn't agree more with what you said. And I remember I was at Prince. Remember Prince?
I do.
Oh, I love Printer. Oh, super
disc. It's a restaurant now, I think.
Yeah,
isn't it?
It used to be a club. And I saw a bunch of footy players, AFL players from a footy club. This guy came up to me and goes, can I say hi to those guys? And I said, go for it, man. I was with them. They fucking burned this fan. Like, gave him nothing.
Yeah.
Broke my heart. This kid was like the all my hero. And not even like a g'day, just fucking told him to fuck off.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, I never want to do that. I don't want to be that person. It's annoying sometimes when I'm having dinner with Chantel and someone comes up and stays for 10 minutes and I'm like, all right, mate, good to see you.
See you later. Yeah.
But I am who I am because of everybody, not me.
Mm.
I could be playing tennis and no one watching. It's because people have bought into my story. So that's part of it. And the critics is part of it. And people calling you a flog is part of it. Go nuts because, you know, I can't control that. All I can control is what I do and how I, you know, the person that I am. And I call that, Crowe does as well, their persona of Dylan.
Yeah.
They don't know the person as such individually, which is
going with those little things, they get me going a bit. But even that's for people that aren't in business or in, you know, the level that you're on now. People just in life, like when, you know, young kids listen to this, people, teenagers, adults at work, that's just, it's so relatable to any of that shit.
Yep.
I need you to flex on me.
Yep.
You've done a lot. You've met a lot of people. Talk me through your top three fave peeps you met.
Okay, number one is, we very, very lightly touched on it before, but the proudest I've ever been of myself was at Meredith Music Festival. I had played tennis for 24 hours in a row nonstop the day before. I broke the world record. I raised $200,000 for my foundation. Had a little sleep, and then I went straight to Meredith because I knew that the Wu-Tang Clan was playing, Ghostface Killah in particular. Now, we got there. I had a couple, and I'm 50 metres in from the mosh, and he goes, we need someone to come up and spit the Method Man verse of Protect Your Neck, my favourite song, the last song I listen to of every time I play. And I was like, me. Anyway, crowd surfed. He picked me after. He didn't want to because he thought I was going to fuck it up. And then he stands over you. He's like 6'5", huge, goes for skills, massive. He's like, are you going to fuck this up? You're going to embarrass yourself? And I was like, bro, do you want me to do all seven verses? That's what I said. Bit arrogant. Didn't know all seven. But I was like, I'm on one now. Yeah. And he goes, cool. Anyway, it was like watching a car crash because it's my bit and the crowd is like silent. Who's this guy? No one knew who I was then as well.
Yeah.
Who's this guy in a wheelchair? You know, it was like slow-mo. And all my mates are going to my brother, what's this fucking, what is he, I know he loves attention, what is he doing? Zach's like, don't you worry, he's got it. And then it was like, he threw it to me, and he's like, it's the Method Man, but short, Mr. Meth, moving on your left, ha! And then launched into it. And the crowd went, it was the best.
Yeah.
Because I'm expected to win tennis tournaments, correct? Expected to play basketball well, it's my job. Am I a rapper? No. So to not choke with your favorite rap group and rap.
Yeah, it's huge.
Best thing ever.
Huge.
And then it got a bit better. A friend of ours, Lozzie Hughes, worked at a promotion company. And 18 months later, I stayed in touch with them. And 18 months later, the Wu-Tang Clan couldn't get back into Australia because Ghostface, Inspector Deck, and a couple others had gun charges from like 92. So they got blocked. So I didn't think this played a role at all. But I wrote a letter to the Department of Immigration. I was like, hi, it's Dylan Alcott, OAM, wheelchair tennis player, you know. When I was in hospital, Wu-Tang got me through, like mayonnaise all over it. And guess what? The next day they got in.
Oh, my God.
So the RZA, the head of Wu-Tang, called and was like, yo, Dylan, thanks for getting us in.
And I was that is the best story, man, bro, ever.
So then Rod Laver and I rap with Wu-Tang again. The same verse. It's pretty cool. And Wu-Tang's like my favorite band. I listen to, it's the last song I listen to every time I play tennis.
You've written the letter, though. Yeah, that's unbelievable.
The letter was the most... had so much GST on it by me.
That's sick.
Anyway, I reckon it paid no role, but they just the next day they got in. So they were like our saviour, the little cute white guy in a wheelchair. I call myself young disabled bastard. So that's one.
Yep.
You producer Sam showing something because I got on stage. Sounds like a bit of a name drop, but I met Calvin Harris, who was a good bloke.
And I
had a little peck off Kesha.
Oh.
Yeah, so maybe Kesha. That's
okay.
I've very strangely was in Argentina when I was 14 years old and I was playing tennis back then a little bit as a junior and I came out of an elevator and there was like a red velvet rope and I was like, it's kind of weird and I don't like lining up or, you know, very lucky in a wheelchair, kind of circumnavigate anything. I was like, what's this doing here? So I went under the rope and I ran into the foot of...
Diego Maradona?
The Dalai Lama. That was. I ran into his ankle pretty hard. Like,
what did he say?
He just turned around and smiled, and I was like, "That's got to be bad luck." I was 14. I freaked out.
The Dalai Lama. Wow. Yeah,
but maybe he blessed me because
I think he did, bro. Good after. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So that's pretty cool.
That's pretty cool.
I had dinner with Joe Biden.
That's very cool. Man.
I think yeah. So I've been lucky to meet some pretty cool people, but I'd rather have a Palmer with my mates.
Yeah.
Ooh. I'm not that kind of guy. I'm not frothing for that. I'm very lucky that I've done some crazy, like beating Calvin Harris' private jet, thanks to my mate Tyson, and done all kinds of stupid shit that I never thought happened. So, yeah, I've lived a pretty cool life, luckily, which I don't take for granted.
There's plenty more to come, I'm sure. Let's talk about what's going on off the court and out of the media, I suppose, for yourself. We've got Get Skilled, which is a company that I think you've started with your family.
Yeah, so I've got two companies that I founded. One of them is called Get Skilled Access. A consulting company where we work with governments and corporates to help them better understand.
And that's with your brother, isn't it?
Yeah, so my brother and my dad, and we've got some business partners as well. What we do is we educate governments and corporates to better understand people with disabilities, products and services, but also get them ready to employ people with disabilities.
Sure. So say a company, won't name one, but say a big company needs some advice on what to do, how to like make it more accessible or something like that. You'd come in and give it a bit of an audit and or something like
that. Correct. Yeah. So we do like disability inclusion plans, auditing, access consulting, training, all kinds of stuff. We make educational pieces and every one of our associates has a disability.
Mm.
So I don't know what it's like to
employ.
We employ. So we've got a team of like 30 associates with all different disabilities. I don't know what it's like to be blind. So I'm not going to tell you. Someone who is blind.
Yeah,
the example that we give is we went to Coles with our team and we went with the executive team at Coles, right? And we said, here's a shopping that we put them in a wheelchair, made them vision impaired, made them deaf, made them on a mobility scooter. Simulated what it was like.
Yeah.
To have 2% visions, everything. And we gave them a shopping list and said, go buy food for your family. And they go, we can't. Our store's not accessible. I said, well, it's not my store, is it?
Wow.
So as a result, we created training that trained all 200,000 of their staff. Because people, when I go to the supermarket, they used to run away because they're scared they're going to offend me rather than come help.
Come help,
yeah. So it's about normalizing an education, which is really cool. It's going well. And the other company is I've got a ready-made meal service called Able Foods, mm-hmm. which is fresh, not frozen food for people with a disability on the NDIS. You know, there is so much crap food out there and things like that. It's 80% of it is funded by the government as well. Yep. So it's only no more than $3 a meal. And we're actually now in stores. We've got baked beans in stores at Coles as well, launching right now. So we're always trying to be accessible. Also, we only hire people with disabilities at Able Foods too. Mm-hmm. But you know how baked beans are in cans?
Yes.
People can't open cans with disabilities with their hands, yeah?
How do you do it?
So we're the first baked bean in a microwavable rip pouch. So we're going to do a whole bunch of different products where we're going to educate other brands to be more accessible. And it's also a point of difference, which is pretty cool.
That's super cool, man. Very, very cool. Dylan Alcott Foundation, talk us through this. And I suppose we touched on it a little bit earlier when it came to the employment and whatnot. What's this about and how did it come about?
Yeah, so it's about... it's set up to help young Australians with disabilities who feel marginalised because of their disabilities, like I did, help them fulfil their potential and achieve their dreams in whatever they want to do. When I started playing sport, my brother was the played at the East Brighton Vampires, right? He was under nines and I was the assistant manager because I couldn't play. And then I was like, hey, I want to start playing tennis. If Zach played footy, he got a $100 pair of footy boots. Mm. If I needed to play tennis, I needed a $10,000 wheelchair.
Fuck.
Just to even try it. And guess what? If you can't afford it, you don't get to do it.
Yeah.
To go to university for a lot of people with disabilities is hard because they need extra support. They can't afford it, so they don't go. So what we're doing is eliminating those barriers for young Aussies with disabilities to achieve what they wanted. We've already put people through university. We've given wheelchairs and sporting equipment to come Paralympians. A young kid called Paddy, Paddy's pickup, he's from Canberra. He's got severe autism, but he loves doing the laundry, right? But he can't get a job. So we funded his startup whereby he goes around all the cafes in the city, picks up all their washing, does it, and then drops it home, right? Now he's employed. He makes money out of that. It's all about figuring out ways so people can thrive in whatever way they can. So it's probably the thing I'm most proud of, man, is the work we do there. We've raised, you know, near 750 grand, I think, over a couple of years through Ability Fest, donated so many things to young Aussies with disabilities. So I'm looking forward to doing more and more of that, especially once I finish tennis.
Oh, hugely rewarding, man. You've done so much and it's only the beginning of it, I suppose. I've even today, I felt like I was pretty aware of things, but there's so many other things we can just keep educating ourselves on for the awareness of things. Like I had no idea about the supermarket, yeah. Like how hard that would be to do that. And yeah. I suppose just putting those things out there with all these things is a massive influence.
Exactly. And just talking about this, I never thought about that. You know what I mean? Or like, you know, when you walk into any store, whatever it is, it's about educating and understanding so you can make it more accessible, but also help, you know, when people need it, which is cool.
I don't want to embarrass you. There's a few more. You've got your book, Able.
Yep.
All good bookstores. Get into that.
Check it out.
Plenty more in that we haven't touched on today, so you make sure you get that. And then Listen Able or Listenable podcast.
Listen Able.
I listened to an episode yesterday, actually. There was first episode that you were with Angus O'Loughlin. Great host. He's a talent. He's got great chemistry together.
Yeah.
I love listening to you too. But something that is incredible, like you're fucking huge. Like your wingspan is 190.
Yeah, so you're supposed to be as tall as your arm span, yeah?
Yeah.
So my brother's about 6'3", my arm span is 6'4". And I've been going to the gym a bit, so I've actually got a bit bigger, which is cool. And but I'm lucky, like for some reason when I push, a lot of people in wheelchairs look fucked up weird because their arm's so long, their legs small. I used to be morbidly obese as a kid, best thing ever, because my legs were so fat. Over time, they're shrinking, but they kind of...
They're sort of fitting with the regime.
A little bit, which is all right. Also, for some reason, I think it's all about chair setup, how you look. But I've got massive hands, long levers,
big hands,
average size dick. But
that's okay. That happens. It's a great podcast. Talk us through that quickly. What's that about? Who's in it? What are you doing?
We profile the lives of people living with a disability in a different lens, in a really funny, emotional, relatable, authentic way. Not preaching, but just getting people to tell their story, you know? How do you, do you turn the lights on at home when you're blind? I don't know. Do you?
I wouldn't think you would.
I don't know. But yeah, yeah. Interesting sure. question, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, if you're an amputee, do you have sex with your legs on or off?
It's very interesting.
Hey, I don't know these questions, but I'm like, I want to, maybe we want to find this stuff out.
Yeah.
So our guests are amazing.
And they're so open to just talk open. About, yeah.
I don't know. One of the most interesting episodes is a girl called Prue Stevenson. She's got autism. Autism is so hard to describe. She describes what it's like. It's one of the most amazing episodes. The big thing that she said is we all talk in cliches and she can't process. For example, she said, when my mom says it's raining cats and dogs, I hide under a table because that scares me.
Yeah.
Oh, I never thought about that.
Yep.
I said, give me a bell when you're downstairs. She goes, how are you going to give me a bell if you're upstairs? As in an actual bell.
Yes, 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 yes.
And I was like, oh, that's so true. I didn't think of that. So you can see how their world is hard to live when we don't understand it. So it's not about them not being wanting to be accessible. It's us not being accessible to people. It's eye-opening. So it's called Listenable. Also, one of the worst moments of last year was when the podcast award nominees came out and Listenable missed out on a nomination. Dylan Friends got nominated, us all.
Yeah, that's not good. Didn't win, so.
Okay, well.
Well, next year, 2021's a show for both, so I think, take the.
You should be giving me two leads rather than the opposite.
No, yeah. not so much. I'm learning a lot off you. Mate, it's been absolutely treat. It's been absolutely incredible. One thing I do want to know, though, because I know we touched on it earlier, when you say things, things happen. Dylan Allcott, in the next period of time, what's next for you? It looks like you said you've got tennis, obviously, for the forthcoming future. What do you see? What are your plans? What's next? Where can we see you soon?
Yeah, I mean, you know, there's a lot of people going through worse things than I am at the moment, and love to everyone who might have lost their job or whatever, but hopefully the Paralympic Games goes ahead this year. Mm. That's obviously the big holy grail for me. So hopefully coronavirus aside, we can get to Tokyo and things like that. And then there's lots of things I want to do. You know, I have as I said, a bit of acting and things like that. The work with the businesses. I'm on Hit Radio, which is like Fox FM, Today FM, B105, wherever you are around the country, which is cool. I love working with Angus. I've got a beautiful partner, Chantel. You know, we've been together 2 years and have a family and things like that. One day, there's lots of different stuff. And, you know, I'm just, I think sometimes the most important thing you can say to yourself is just keep being you. You know what I mean? And I have little ideas and things that come into my head and I'm just going to keep doing them because, you know, I'm lucky to be alive, brother. I was pretty crook as a kid and I live the best life of anybody that I've ever met. I live a better life than anyone in this room listening right now and I'm lucky to be doing that. I'm so lucky. And I get out of bed every day thinking like that and, you know, it doesn't mean that I don't sit on the couch and eat Uber Eats sometimes and do nothing. I do that as well. But, you know, I really enjoy life and I'm going to keep trying to do that in every way that I can and also have a bit more me time, you know. I think I, after the Paralympic, deserve a bit of time off. You can catch me at the Bergheim.
Yeah, okay.
But I'm just so, as I said, I'm just so humbled to the support that I get. You know, I don't know how it's happened because not many athletes, if any athletes with a disability, have been lucky enough to have cut through. I'm the lucky one and I just want to keep putting myself out there so other people, you know, especially in things like dating and that, the best thing in my life is my relationship. All of us.
Yeah, for everyone. That's
imagine if you've never been on a date before because everyone looks at you different. That's bullshit. So keep smacking down those barriers so people can be the people that they want to be.
Man, you're killing it. You are doing that. It's so impressive. I'm so blessed to have you in the show.
You are a very good broadcaster, my brother.
Nah, man.
What about Dylan Dill one day? Like Talkback Radio. Get that proper cash.
I don't know if Angus would be happy with that, but maybe I can come.
True.
Like,
I do love Angus.
On the side.
What about the Dill sandwich, Dill Angus and Dill.
Yeah, man, thanks so much again. I can't believe it. Finally locked it in. It's been good. It's been real. Best of luck for the year. Look forward to catching up for a few beers soon. And so honoured to have you on the show.
You're a star, brother. Love you.
If that wasn't enough for you and you want even more, you're in luck. Dylan Friends is now on Patreon. Dylan Best Friends. An exclusive loyalty subscription featuring the debrief podcast of each episode and bonus Q&As from Patreon members like this. Do you prefer the King of Bayside, Modern Day Adonis, or the Wheelchair Brad Pitt?
Oh, Wheelchair Brad Pitt for sure. Although
King
of Bayside, I say that about myself and people bag me. Like, why can't Brad Pitt be in a wheelchair? And everyone goes, are you comparing yourself to Brad Pitt? I was like, maybe.
And there's plenty more where that came from. If you'd like to learn more, you can head to patreon.com/Dylan Friends or you can head to the link in the show notes. Thanks for listening to the Dylan Friends podcast. If you liked the show, it'd be a massive help if you could like, follow, rate, leave a review, or even share with your friends. The show is produced by myself and Sam Bonzer.
Damon Jackman from Creative Edge Films is responsible for audio and visual production. The show is recorded at the Dylan Friends Studio in Melbourne, Australia. If you'd like to get in touch or suggest a guest or advertise with the Dylan Friends podcast, please email us at inquiries@dylanfriends.com. Thanks so much for tuning in.